You have to maintain that sense that you're not alone. Because that's kind of what it is. The people get used to the corporations producing new products and new rules all the time. And then when they stop, it's easy to feel bereft, easy to feel alone, like you've wasted your investment. And, well, I better find the next thing. But I don't think you do. I think you just need to find like-minded people. You know, it's kind of the appeal. Tabletop gaming is you don't need a computer or whatever. You know, you don't need a server. You just need your pieces that you bought and a table and another person. And I think people give up on that too easily sometimes when they don't have that big central producer, manufacturer giving them new things. So I think just banding together and refusing to let go of things would be my recommendation. I don't know how
well that works in practice, but...
Hello, everyone. Welcome back. Today, we have a very special guest with us, Mr. Nate Beam, who is the president of the NAF, which is the International Association of Blood Bowl Players, and he's been the president since 2018. So welcome, Nate. Thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
My pleasure. Now, I apologize. A lot of the other guests we've had on, it's been people that Chris and I have known pretty well. You were actually introduced to us by a listener, which thank you, Bob Fletcher. That was much appreciated. But what's your background in gaming, man?
I started playing when I was fairly young. I got into fighting fantasy books and Lone Wolf. You remember those? Are basically choose your own
adventure
with dice. And then my father was a kind of a lifelong war gamer, and we got into 40K when I was pretty young, 11 or 12, and I bought Blood Bowl soon after that, and been playing off and on since then, I guess. So
that's, sweet deal.
I'm pretty old now, so 30 plus years of more gaming.
Right on. I think Chris and I know the feeling.
Anywho, so Nate, normally we talk about some of the hobby stuff we've been working on. What have you been up to lately?
I'm putting together a team for Old World Alliance. Is one of the newer Blood Bowl teams. It's basically humans and dwarves and halflings working together, and I'm trying to put together some models from the 80s to make a team for that.
Nice.
So I've been going through my old stores and closets and cupboards to find those pieces and adding a few from eBay and stuff like that.
Awesome. What have you been up to, Chris?
Man, so like after the last episode and the couple before that where you brought up Conquest, and I was like, oh no, not gonna do it. Yeah, I got some Conquest, so yeah, I have impulse control problems. But I did pick up some dwarves. It definitely was the army that kind of was screaming my name. And like the boxes were so small, I didn't really like my brain wasn't really putting together the amount of models that I needed to assemble for it. It was one of those like, oh yeah, this box is slightly bigger than like a Infinity box or an Eden box. There's probably like four models in here. And like each box has 12 models. So, you know, I think I'm in like the 70 something range, 80 maybe. Quite a few. And then, yeah, like we talked about last episode, I'm still working on that, the commission work for both Warcaster and for Cursed City. Actually made some good progress on Cursed City. It's all assembled, it's mostly primed, and have probably about a fifth of the box painted up at this point.
Right on.
Yeah, lots of work. What about you, Owen?
Conquest for days, 120 models put together this month, so woo! trying to finish that up for the month, and then we start painting them. Beyond that, I've got a little bit of Relic Blade on my paint bench left to finish. Been trying to squeak that into the margins, but it's really just been Conquest all day, every day, which I have no complaints about. Moving on, we actually have a new section of the show we're going to start doing, upcoming Dead War Game events, now that those are a thing again. So we'll mention Dead Game events that we're aware of in this segment. If you have any events that you'd like us to mention, please reach out to us and we'll be happy to mention them on the show. The big one that we know of at the moment is there's going to be a Dark Age 750-point event at the Dragonfall Convention, which is in Lake Geneva, Wisconsin. That's in Chicagoland for people that are unfamiliar with the area. That's going to be on Saturday, October 23rd. If you'd like to sign up for that or learn more about it, head over to the Dragonfall website and you can get the deets. Chris and I have also talked about doing some dead game events at ArmorCon and CaptainCon. I've submitted events, but I haven't heard anything back, but we'll be there. And even if there's not an official event, we should be playing some dead games. I guess on that note, I should be nice here. Nate, are there any upcoming big Blood Bowl events you want to give a shout out to?
Oh, not so much. We're kind of just opening up again. There's the Four Diamonds Cup in, better check the date here, in Pennsylvania in August.
Okay. Is
one of the big ones on the East Coast. Is a charity event for children's cancer research.
Nice.
Hold on, I'll give you that date. Give me 1 second. That's August 21st. That's in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. That's probably the biggest thing on the calendar so far for the East Coast.
Right on. Well, we'll include a link to that in the show notes, so if people are interested, they can head on over and get some more information. So having said all that, today we have Nate with us for a very specific reason. We could do a more traditional episode where we cover the history of Blood Bowl, but I feel like Blood Bowl is a game that most gamers, and particularly most listeners of this podcast, are familiar with and know something about. But the reason we brought Nate on is because anytime a game dies, the community tends to have a response of, we just need to keep the game going, so either the company that dropped it or another company will pick it up. Look what Blood Bowl did. Look how great that is that that game got picked back up. Which begs the question, what exactly did the Blood Bowl community do? And we have Nate here to help us answer that question. So I'm going to give a real quick overview on Blood Bowl just to kind of set up some of the questions for Nate. It was a game that was originally released in 1987. I feel old saying that. I did not know it was that old. By Jervis Johnson, who's now one of the big wigs over at GW and published by Games Workshop. The game had a few different editions, new boxes coming out through the 90s, culminating in the fourth edition, which released in 2001. After that was released, a Blood Bowl's Rule Committee, BBRC, you may see that online, was put together, which included members of the community as well as occasional members of the Games Workshop rules group, to release annual updates. They released an annual update every year through 2006 and then a final annual update in 2009. And after that, the game was really quiet for a while until 2016, when a new version of Blood Bowl, heavily based on the Living Rulebook 6, but then there was updates to that afterwards, was released. So I guess the question is, what happened in the intermediate time? So I'm actually not the most knowledgeable about this, but we have Nate here, who is. So Nate, in your opinion, when did GW really stop slowing down or stopping support for Blood Bowl?
Well, they stopped producing the Living Rulebook in 2009. So that was kind of, the rules were parked at that point, but they did continue to stock the miniatures and the game. You had to order them directly, I believe, but up through maybe 2014, you could still buy the box game, and the miniatures were available until they stopped producing metal miniatures altogether, which I believe was around 2011 when they got rid of their metal casting facility.
Okay.
But the good news for Blood Bowl players was that we did have the BBRC to modernize the rules up through 2009, and we had the NAF, my organization, which was set up in cooperation with Games Workshop. I think that's probably the differentiator, is that Games Workshop, at least in the early days, were willing to help us put together these projects and
nice.
The organization. So you had some degree of official support, which seems very important to gamers, in my experience. And as we were kind of deputized in that way, we were seen as more official, and people allowed us to take a leadership role when Games Workshop stopped supporting the game directly.
I definitely think that had to be a big thing that helped wrangle all the cats in the community in terms of who to listen to. So that, I imagine that was very, very helpful. So from 2009, you get the last version of the Living Rulebook, to 2016, there weren't new releases for the game, either in rules or miniatures. What was the community's response to that?
There was little response, honestly. We kept playing. We kept organizing tournaments. Third-party companies were putting out models all throughout that period. The video game was produced, which became a great recruiting tool. It was much easier to point to the video game as something that was on the shelf that people could acquire to learn the game.
Mm-hmm.
But mostly we just kept plugging along and got a very stable meta. The rules weren't changing at a certain point, so people could add their own flourishes in terms of house rules or tournament rules. you start seeing more ambitious tournaments like Euro Bowl, which is a national competition with national teams that play each other, and World Cups were certainly a fairly big deal. They were tournaments that grew larger and larger with each iteration, so that it was very impressive to say, oh, 500 players showed up, 900 players showed up. Eventually, last year, 1,500 players showed up.
Whoa. I mean, that's more players than many of the games that we talk about have ever had all at one event, which is just kind of mind-blowing. In your experience working with the community, so 2009, you stopped getting official support. 2016, you do again. But it seems like for the 2009-2016 period, your events getting increasingly well-attended. Was your impression that was people coming out of the woodwork that were just enthusiastic about Blood Bowl and really happy with the community, or was the community itself growing in size?
There was a bit of a plateau in that middle region, kind of the 2012-2014 period,
mm-hmm.
where we became a little bit anxious. Where are the new players going to come from? And as I said, there's a little bit of anxiety there. But then we did get the video game. We did see a lot of growth from that. You'd get new players that were more or less ready to play, understood the game. Then we started seeing numbers go up again. When we started preparing for the 2015 World Cup, that became kind of a rallying point, and tournaments started growing again. The number of tournaments and the attendance at those tournaments both started growing again. 2015, we had the World Cup in Italy. It had just under 1,000 people. And that sort of pointed to as what caused Games Workshop to, you know, take note and probably still some money to be made. And the sequel video game was also a success. So I think that kind of put in their mind that this is a viable game. This is a game that people are attached to. And maybe we should give it another try ourselves, rather than let other companies make money off of it.
Right on. Was GW in touch with leaders of the community in the period like leading up to the launch of the 2016 game?
Not to a great extent. They did contact certain prominent members to become playtesters. And, okay. you know, we knew it was coming at some point, but no, we weren't. We weren't directly polled or anything like that.
Right on. Pardon my ignorance here, but is the BBRC still in effect today?
It is not. It's okay. Been just over a decade, I think, since they shuttered the BBRC.
So was that something that was still active in the period between 2009 and 2016? Like, were the committee kind of self-sustaining, or were the last people in 2009 kind of it, and then attrition happened and it just kind of fell apart?
Right. BBRC was, as opposed to the NAF, BBRC was put together by Games Workshop. Jervis mm-hmm. Johnson was a partner in it. So Games Workshop pulled the plug on it in 2009 with the game not quite complete. So there were a few outstanding elements that people added in after that moment, after 2009. But largely, the rules were viewed as locked from that point. You didn't see much change until they issued the new editions.
Right on. So for new players that were coming in based upon the video game, I know that you, as you mentioned, you could special order Blood Bowl miniatures up until a certain point. But I also know that a lot of third-party companies were making teams. Were you finding people were gravitating towards the new miniatures from third-party manufacturers, or were people trying to track down the older miniatures? What was the community's response on the tabletop?
You saw some people that didn't care for third-party miniatures or thought it was wrong somehow, but
mm-hmm.
for the most part, that was most people's choice, I think. During that period, when you went to a tournament, it would be at least 50-50 third-party and old models, old Games Workshop models. So they were pretty popular. I mean, they were sustaining the community to some extent, because people like those shiny new things. They weren't coming from anywhere else, unless you were just converting things on the fly. Mm-hmm. So it was nice to have somebody that was making modern models for the game. The community was obviously appreciative of that.
That's kind of one of my big questions about how y'all pulled it off, because in my experience, gamers really thrive on novelty. If there's not new rules and there's not new miniatures, even if you have the best game in the world, you know, people at some point want to get something new in. And it sounds like you had a few different vectors for getting the novelty factor there. In terms of the team, so 2009 has a whole slew of different teams you can play as, but I recall seeing a lot of third-party vendors make teams that I didn't see in the official LRB. There were some unofficial teams floating around. What was the community's response to novelty and the rules?
Well, generally speaking, the teams might have looked different, but they were supposed to represent the teams.
Okay.
One exception to that, perhaps, was there's a team called the Apes of Wrath that was produced by a podcast, and they kind of, you know, brainstormed throughout an episode and ended up making this roster and having the models produced. That was an extra team that was accepted by the community to a very small extent, I would say. they weren't the most popular team. But then they also had Bretonians were made up by, they were a fan creation that has since been, it was first incorporated into the video game, and now the new edition of the game has Imperial Nobles, who are obviously very similar to the Bretonians. So that's an instance where Games Workshop more or less adopted a fan concept and made them real. For the most part, those are the only two new teams, really, that emerged from that period.
Alrighty, that's interesting. I didn't know that. So we've talked about a few different things that were positives for the community, but in this time frame too, telecommunications changed a lot. So the way you interacted with the internet in 2001 is really different than it is in 2015. You mentioned podcast. Was social media or internet forums or any of that, do you think that was instrumental in keeping the game kicking?
There was some internet communication. There was a talk, Blood Bowl was the big forum that everyone used for years and years.
Mm-hmm.
Games Workshop forced them to rename themselves to Talk Fantasy Football, which means you get a lot of people wandering in wanting to talk about, you know, the NFL. So, but that was always that was the first big place on the internet where everyone gathered to talk about Blood Bowl. But I do think the podcasts were very important to the scene. When I first started getting back into Blood Bowl after years away, it was the podcast that made me feel connected and gave me a sense of what tournaments were being played and what people were doing around the world. I would say that was probably had a greater effect of the tying people together. And now we have, you know, Blood Bowl Community is a large Facebook group that has 10,000 plus members. And if you want an argument, it's a good place to go.
Gamers never. I can't believe that people would be opinionated about a tabletop board game.
Right.
When you look at it, you know, I know we've talked a couple times, like the video game pops up. The video game is really the first place that I actually got involved in Blood Bowl. Do you really think it was something that was helpful to getting people in? Do you think it's something that has any like negatives associated with it? How do you think it's really affected the community since it came out?
Well, there was a sense that people were worried that if it was that easy to play, why would you play tabletop anymore? But that hasn't been my experience. I don't know anybody personally that quit tabletop to play the video game, but I know a lot of people that started playing the video game and migrated to tabletop. So it's really been a great recruiting tool, because otherwise you run a demo and it's a fairly simple game, but there are still a number of concepts to get across quickly. Whereas if somebody can sit at home and just play the computer game by themselves, it's obviously much easier to teach them the game. And it's great. It's really great to have somebody who comes in and has a chance of beating you right off the bat because they played 100 games online or whatever. And I haven't seen anything negative come out of it, really. I haven't seen any clannishness or gatekeeping around the video game. It's been pretty positive.
So it's, you know, now we're looking at 2016. GW re-releases Blood Bowl with, you know, some fancy new models, some nice plastics and such. How did the community respond to it after the game being dead for so long?
There was a lot of excitement. There weren't many negative aspects to that initial release. It was more or less the same rules, so there wasn't much negativity surrounding it.
Mm-hmm.
It grew the community. I don't have any numbers, but looking at it, you know, just my personal observation, you start seeing a lot of people you didn't see before. But it used to be that the community would grow very slowly oh, here's a new guy in town that's interested. Whereas all of a sudden, your 40K players were, oh, here's a new box on the shelf. Let's try Blood Bowl. And suddenly you had, you know, more new people than you'd ever had before. And there was a little bit of culture shock, I think, because we were used to being our own somewhat isolated community for so long. And suddenly we had much younger gamers with their own ideas of how things should work. So there was a little bit of culture clash there, culture shock.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, you know, it's always good to grow the game, I guess. So the 2020 game just came out and it's more, there's greater change from any previous edition. But at this point, veterans are probably in the minority in the community.
Hmm.
If there are any objections, it's almost too late to voice them. You know, it's these new sort of new gamers that have kind of taken over. So for better or worse, it's not what it used to be. It's not this isolated community where a number of people are making proclamations about what's good and what's bad and being believed. It's a much more inclusive and sometimes contentious community than it used to be.
So what's the re-release and the most recent one in addition to 2016 resulted in terms of membership to the NAF? Did you guys see a spike in members? Have you seen a decline?
There was a slight increase. It hasn't been as marked as you might imagine. We averaged around 2,500 active members most year. We have a two-tiered membership plan. You pretty much get a lifetime membership in terms of ranking by just signing up once. But if you want use of the forum and you want to be able to vote and that sort of thing, you have to renew. You want the annual gift. You have to renew every year.
Mm-hmm.
So our numbers aren't always accurate in relation to who's actually playing. But as far as active memberships, we did have around 2,500. That jumped up to more like 4,000 on the re-release. And it fell off a little bit. Last year was bad, obviously, because people weren't playing. You weren't renewing.
Yeah,
so
it
fell back down to the previous level. But yeah, that's significant growth. There is some interest in what the NAF offers, obviously. So it's been good for us.
Right on. So we talked about the video game. We talked about social media and podcast. We talked about having some initial quasi-blessing from Games Workshop to keep the game kicking around. I'm going to ask you a tough question. If any one of those things didn't happen, or if only one of those things happened, do you think Blood Bowl would have still had the community success it did? And if so, which one?
I think the re-release has been the largest factor.
Okay.
I think we probably could have done without the others to some extent.
I guess my question is, do you think that you'd still have 1,000 people showing up for a tournament in 2015 without the video game or without podcast?
Oh, no. I think you need all of those things to get those numbers. I don't think you could sacrifice any of them. But I think that without any of them, we could still have a community of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
There's sort of diehards at the core of Blood Bowl, I think, that would never let it go. There's always, you know, you go, sometimes I roll to some small town where I'm traveling and find out they've had a Blood Bowl league for 15 years or whatever. And we've never heard of them. I've never met them. You know, they're not math numbers. It's just that kind of game that seems like people get into and have a hard time separating from for whatever reason. I think because it's fairly simple to learn, it's easy to return to. So it has this kind of perennial popularity among people that have learned it.
Right on. Yeah, I guess what I'm trying to drive at is we talk to a lot of people that are very passionate about games that don't have support, kind of like Blood Bowl did between 2009 and 2016. And the perennial comment we'll see when a game dies is, oh, we just need to keep it alive like Blood Bowl did. So in terms of action items for those communities, you know, podcast, I definitely think is a good thing. Running events is a good thing. Having someone make a video game, that might be a little harder. So in terms of what the most impactful of those things is, do you think it was having the community organization and the events going? Do you think the video game really was the big X factor? Any thoughts on that?
Well, obviously, if you can convince somebody to produce a video game for your dead game, yeah, that'd be great. But that's not viable. I think having a central organization is very helpful. You know, I should say I don't have that much experience with other big game systems. You know, I played a handful here and there, but Blood Bowl's been my main game for a long time. So it's hard for me to compare it to other systems. But I think if you do have organized play and a central event, you know, it's just an annual event when everyone gets together at a convention or whatever, that's very helpful. You have to maintain that sense that you're not alone. Because that's kind of what it is. The people get used to the corporations producing new products and new rules all the time. And then when they stop, it's easy to feel bereft, easy to feel alone, like you've wasted your investment. And, well, I better find the next thing. But I don't think you do. I think you just need to find like-minded people. You know, it's kind of the appeal. Tabletop gaming is you don't need a computer or whatever. You know, you don't need a server. You just need your pieces that you bought and a table and another person. And I think people give up on that too easily sometimes when they don't have that big central producer, manufacturer giving them new things. So I think just banding together and refusing to let go of things would be my recommendation. I don't know how
to practice, but
I think it's tough, you know, because I think in general, you know, like we've had episodes before where we've talked about, you know, well, what are the pros and what are the cons of dead wargaming and stuff like that? I think when it comes to, you know, a lot of people saying, oh, we just got to keep it going like Blood Bowl. And, you know, a lot of people hold on hope with a lot of these dead games that, yeah, you know, it's just going to come back around, you know, if we keep it going. Unfortunately, I think Blood Bowl has a couple things going for it that a lot of other dead games didn't necessarily have, which when you look at it, makes it a little bit difficult for other games to kind of have that same chance at like kind of reoccurrence. Blood Bowl being part of, you know, the Warhammer Fantasy universe, Warhammer Fantasy never being discontinued, you know, or made into a dead game outside of, you know, switched over to Age of Sigmar. And being a part of a living universe that continued to grow is something that not a lot of other dead games have. When you look at the fact that Games Workshop is still one of the biggest minis companies by a huge, huge, almost insurmountable degree compared to a lot of these other companies, you know, as soon as it comes up, like, hey, check it out, these guys are keeping this game going. It has a ton of support. All of these other little third-party companies making models for this dead game are making money. Like, you have an opportunity to make money here. It becomes pretty easy for them to kind of scoop it back up and make money. It's a little bit more difficult when you look at, like, a company like Eden, or a game like Eden, where it's like, yeah, that company, whether there's money to be made or not, is most likely not just going to be able to kind of like pick itself up again, throw a bunch of cash at it, and start up, you know, with a brand new, neat, like plastic two-player starter set.
Oh, right. Sure. Yeah. As far as the company actually picking the game back up, the same company picking it up in particular, obviously, having Games Workshop own the rights and be able to just pick the game back up is a huge benefit. And it is easier to sell the game to a newcomer when you can say, hey, it's Warhammer with football. That is an excellent point. I agree.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, part of it, like we mentioned, is keeping people involved, you know, and even when you guys weren't really getting a new influx of models and stuff, like, the story was still kind of evolving, you know. If you wanted to read something in that universe, you could go, you know, pick up a Gotrek and Felix book, you could, you know, check out the website for, you know, some community articles. There was still stuff, you know, like, there was still stuff that the main company was doing to kind of evolve that universe. And sometimes you get people kind of drifting over from, like, hey, you know, I play Warhammer 6th edition or so. Oh, there's this, you know, there's these side games, you know, a lot of people fell backwards into, like, Mordheim. You know, some people fall backwards, like, into Blood Bowl because it's affiliated products. And then, like you said, with the video game, you know, it's like, hey, here's some money to be made. Here's a video game. The video game was pretty popular. It's a good recruiting tool. I have very little hope for them, you know, releasing a Dark Age video game, as amazing as it would be.
I think part of that, too, which is a little bit unique to Blood Bowl, is that the video game was the tabletop game. It wasn't a Blood Bowl, a video game set in the Blood Bowl universe, or you know, Madden 2009 reskinned with fantasy races. It was Blood Bowl.
That would be pretty awesome, though.
It would.
I'd be psyched.
I agree.
Or even like going back, what was that? What was that awesome one for the Dreamcast? NFL Blitz. If it had NFL Blitz with Blood Bowl, oh man, I'd be so sold. That'd be amazing.
Oh mercy. We are getting into the weeds. I think that's helpful to point out. I do think that we've seen a few times now that the community just refusing to let go does help keep a community together and will actually help bring new people into the community. We've seen that with Dark Age, where there isn't a BBRC equivalent, you know, organization or quasi-organization or person that can bless rules questions or new rules. But there's a group of dedicated people that continue to run events at conventions, and those conventions continue to be attended. We also see new people join the face group there, and new people interested in picking up the game or tracking down the models. We see new players posting pictures of games all the time. I think all that activity keeps people from walking away and trying to find somewhere else where they can get a game in. Because I think at the end of the day, people need other people to play games, with the exception of some more recent games that do solitary play. And even then, I think that's probably more of an edge case. I think most people that play these games want to play a social game, not sit at home and play, pardon the pun, with themselves. So I do think that's a big part of it.
So outside of Blood Bowl, is there any dead war game you can think of that might be your favorite?
Yeah, it's Confrontation for sure. That was the first game when I returned to wargaming after a bit of a hiatus. I got really into Confrontation. I have the entire Midnor line, and I really enjoyed it. So that's possibly my favorite game of all time, more so than Blood Bowl. Don't tell anybody. Don't bother.
Yeah, don't tell anybody on this podcast. We'll just keep it a secret. So along with that, you know, is there any dead war games out there that you think people should know more about?
Yeah, I don't know if you've covered Helldorado, but I really enjoyed that game. If you don't know the premise, it's kind of the Crusaders discover a portal to hell, and they're like, well, why bother battling Muslims? We'll just go straight to hell and fight demons. And that was a really good French game 6 or 7 years ago, maybe longer, I don't know. And it was a favorite of mine, too.
I think it's one that's actually come up on our Discord with people asking for something on it. If I remember, this was the one that had some controversial art in some of the books.
Oh yeah, it was a little bit adult.
It's like I was trying to think of the right way to say it. That wasn't just gonna be like, all right, we just got real adult real fast.
That's one I think we would like to cover in the future. I played Helldorado. I really enjoyed it. If you look at our episode list, we're probably at about 50% for old independent French games. So we're trying to mix it up a little bit, but it's definitely on the list.
Okay, cool. I look forward to hearing about it.
Right on.
Nice. So along with that, is there anyone or anything you'd like to give a shout out to?
Well, I'd like to thank, you mentioned Bob Fletcher, who put this together, suggested me for the show. I appreciate that. And Mike Davies was the president prior to me, and he looked up some numbers for me over the last couple of days to make sure I was prepared here. So I'd like to thank both of them.
Very cool. I'm glad you were more prepared than we usually are.
I apologize in advance if your quote about Confrontation ends up in a NAF presidential attack ad for the next round.
I'll be ready.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Nate, so much for showing up. We really appreciate you taking the time, and I think this will be very interesting to people who play dead games. If you want to talk about this episode with our community, you can head over to our Facebook group or hop onto our Discord. We include a link to that in our show notes every episode. Discord's funky in that you have to keep updating it. So if you like this, either hop onto the link for this if this is in the July 2021 timeframe, or whatever the most recent episode is if you are listening to this in the future. But thank you again, Nate, for showing up. And on that, I'm Owen.
I'm Chris. Nate's here somewhere.
No, I'm
And this is the Dead War Gamer Society. Intro music is Axe to Mouth by Pulp 45, which is Owen's old band. Outro music is Control My Fate by Ataraxia, which is Chris's old band. All songs used with permission. If you like what you hear, please like or subscribe. Thanks.